Vincent Brown is my name. I was working in independent newspapers at the time, the Sunday Independent, and I'd arranged to meet my brother at the door of independent newspapers on Abbey Street. And I was coming down the stairs in the Independent, and as I got to the end, I heard a bomb go off, and I knew it was a bomb because I'd been in Northern Ireland for a few years before then. And we came around to Talbot Street, and we walked up Talbot Street. And as we did it, I assumed, I wasn't at all prepared for what we were to see, but I assumed that it was a bomb that had been a warning, and probably a few people might have been injured, but not that much. And as we walked up Talbot Street, I was looking at windows that were broken and the odd car that was damaged. It was around here that we suddenly realised that there were bodies lying in the street. And I lifted up a young woman, and as I did so, she simply disintegrated. I didn't know that bodies disintegrated, but she was alive, but she disintegrated.
So what do you see here this morning?
Well, it's all hustle and bustle and everyone is rushing around, but not running.
It's February 2024, and Margaret is looking down Dublin's Talbot Street.
It's a lovely, fresh, crisp morning. Lovely. It's the modern 2024.
Margaret once lived in Dublin, as did her sister, Anne.
I had left here 6 months before that to go to Scotland to do midwifery. And Anne Marn, my sister from Sligo, was here for the last 18 months. She worked in Hawkins House with Posts and Telegraphs, and she lived at her cousin's out in Harold's Cross. So on this Friday evening, the 17th of May...
Today, Margaret is retracing the steps taken by Anne on May 17th, 1974.
On this Friday evening, the 17th of May, Anne was going home as usual. She went home almost every weekend. There was a bus strike on, so they had to walk, but she would have walked probably anyway.
Margaret is my mother, and Anne, who I've never met, is my aunt. That evening, she was on her way to Connolly Station, heading home for Sligo. At the top of North Earl Street, she met Marion Keenan, a friend from home, and Josephine Bradley, a friend from work.
So, after that, this is Marion's story from here on.
Yeah.
So, they carried...
Yeah, just walked down the street, and Anne was coming across, and I was looking forward to going down on the train with her, you know, because we'd catch up, because you didn't. Phones or anything, you know, never saw it. So she went in to buy the tights for her sister. And I waited. That was... And then this girl came down. She came towards us. That was Josephine. And she turned. I don't know whether she was going down for the weekend or not, but she turned to walk with us. I don't know why, because I never got to ask her.
I'm Marion Bradley, Josie's twin sister. We were partners in crime, and unfortunately, the day of the bombings, we had arranged that particular day that we would meet the next day in the afternoon to go looking at flats then, which was apartments. We had so many plans for the future, the two of us. We were going to live together. And the big thing we were all really looking forward to was to celebrate our 21st birthday. But unfortunately, that didn't happen because she was caught in the bombings in Talbot Street on the 17th on her way home from work.
It was a sunny May day, an ordinary Friday evening in Dublin. Rush hour, crowds heading home for the weekend, plans made for parties, families preparing for Holy Communion. But as the city hummed, three cars converged on the capital, loaded with explosives. One made its way to Parnell Street.
My name is Angela O'Neill. I am one of five children. We are the children of Edward Senior and Martha O'Neill. He brought both of my brothers to
Parnell Street on the 17th of May 1974. That day was also my eldest sister's 9th birthday, Denise. He was taking Billy to the barber shop, because Billy and myself were due to receive our first Holy Communions the following day, the 18th of May. It was a beautiful sunny Friday, so I have very vivid memories of the whole day. I can remember being at the hairdresser's with my mum, because I was getting my hair done and she was getting her hair done for the next day. But the reason he went to this particular barber's was because the owner of the barber shop was also involved in the same karate club and had just gotten a new poster in of Bruce Lee, who was the man of the moment at the time. So he had taken the boys to see that.
Another car parked up at South Leinster Street near the workplace of Kevin O'Loughlin's mother, Christina.
Yeah, my mother was a very unusual person for the time. She was born in the early 20s, but she had a trade which is quite unusual for women in that time. She was a French polisher and she was very proud of that, and she always talked about the fact that she had a trade. And she had a nice job in the Shelburne Hotel, which she had for a number of years, and she worked a 5-day week all the time. And she knew everybody in the Shelburne. Everybody knew her. She was very, very popular, you know.
And the other filled a spot on Talbot Street, close to Guiney's.
And we heard the first explosion.
1728. Marion Keenan hears the first bomb going off over on Parnell Street.
We stopped and because it was those times, you know, we knew about explosions. And I said to them, we'll have to get out. There's something going on. We have to get out of here. He went into the welcome inn and had a pint with my mum's cousin, and came back, collected the boys and walked out, and straight as they'd walked out, and apparently the bomb exploded at that moment. They were standing right at the car where the bomb was placed. But I do remember there was a bit of a commotion, and, you know, there was a bit of franticness. Obviously, people would have been very concerned and knew something had happened in the city. It was more serious for Edward, and he was younger as well at the time, I suppose. So he took the full blast of the explosion, obviously along with my dad. But to this day, Edward is still having he's huge medical issues, you know, because he's a lot of shrapnel and things like that still in his body that causes severe complications.
1730. Bernadette Jolie is walking down Talbot Street when a second, no-warning bomb explodes.
Next minute, the whole place shook. That's what it felt like, an earthquake or something. And I actually don't remember a noise from it, but there must have been a huge noise, because afterwards it seemed to be a huge silence because, you know, the noise was so loud. And I was thrown forward onto my knees. I got up and I didn't realise I'd been injured or anything until I noticed that my right arm was just hanging by my side and the blood streaming down it. There were lots of screaming and people running, and a man ran by me with a baby in his arms that was covered in blood. There were lots of injuries. People had, you know, bits of their bodies blown away.
I went into town to buy a white cardigan and some shoes for my daughter's Holy Communion in Amin Street.
Maeve Taylor is 96 years old, the oldest living survivor of the bombings.
When we finished shopping, we were going down Talbot Street. We were outside Guiney's when there was a deafening noise and glass shattered everywhere around us. We were blown across the street and my shoes were blown off. My feet were cut and the children suffered injuries to their faces, hands and legs. We were all streaming blood. You could see nothing because of the black stroke, but we eventually found the chemist and asked the owner to take us to the hospital. He also took a man whose face was badly injured and a baby in his car to Temple Street Hospital. Lisa, who was making our Holy Communion the next day, got 12 stitches in her head.
Among those caught on Talbot Street, the three friends, Josephine, my Aunt Anne and Marion Keenan.
As far as I understand, we were right beside it. Right beside it. And I was lucky, they told me, because when a thing explodes, there's a gap. And I was in that gap. But they weren't. Right. We're right beside it. And I knew they were dead, because there was nothing. It's just... But I couldn't get up. I stayed on my knees. I had to, couldn't stand. But I was completely alive. I never thought I wouldn't be alive. You know, you never, at 19, what do you think? Like, you're just... My last... It was just happy people. Looking forward to the weekend. And just good, honest, low maintenance. In those times, we were all low maintenance. Ordinary people in the wrong place. Yeah. So ordinary, completely ordinary. So ordinary that you didn't even have opinions, you know, you didn't. You just wanted to be happy.
It must have been very tough because you said that you knew straight away that the girls were...
Straight away. Especially Anne. She was beside me.
And it was immediate.
Yeah. Big lump hit her. I can see it to this day. Big lump. Yeah. Poor thing. Age 20.
She worked a 9-to-5 kind of hour, so she would have left the hotel about maybe 5:15, 5:20.
17:32, a third bomb, this time near Trinity College on South Leinster Street.
She would have been back home by 6 o'clock, definitely. So, and she had a routine. I mean, she was coming home to cook our dinner. To be honest, you know, the three boys, we didn't do anything like that. So the three of us were there, and we very soon we realised something had gone wrong.
French polisher Christina O'Loughlin is on her way home.
She would have walked down Kildare Street past the entrance to the Dáil. Then she would have turned right onto South Leinster Street, because we lived in Townsend Street. That was the quickest way to get home. And that's when the bomb exploded. Now, we didn't know anything else. We were thinking, well, maybe she was injured and maybe she's gone to hospital or something, but we didn't. It took a while for us to realise that she might not be coming home. We had no telephone. There wasn't any way of finding out anything. Nobody called or anything.
Back over on Talbot Street, among those first on the scene, journalist Vincent Brown and his brother Malachy.
The bomb had gone off after a warning, and therefore I was unprepared for the scene that we came across a bit further up the road from here. Well, certainly there was a bus strike and there was terrible traffic jams, which is a relevant part of the story of what happened. That meant that the ambulances took ages to arrive, and a number of people were being taken to hospital in private cars. I lifted up a young woman, and as I did so, she simply disintegrated. I didn't know that bodies disintegrated, but she was alive, but she disintegrated. And I put her down, and then we came across a big, tall man with a huge piece of metal on his side, metal from a car on his side. And we lifted him up very awkwardly with the help of a stranger. And we took him up to what was then Mourne's Hotel, I think it's called. And then a guard that was here said, there's another bomb about to go off. And we ran down there towards
Connolly Station.
And we didn't know if there was a bomb, where to go off. We didn't know where we were running into the bomber.
Bodies we found were about 50 yards from the scene of the explosion and obviously had been killed by shrapnel in the back of the head.
Well, I was just standing at the window there and I heard a bang, you know. I just heard a thud at first. And I sort of said to a guy that came in, that sounds like a bomb going off, you know. It wasn't a very loud bang, it was just a sort of a low thud. And a few seconds later, all of a sudden, the window just collapsed, you know. The window just shattered. And lucky enough, I turned my back and I wasn't cut by any of the...
Word quickly spreads through the city of the three blasts, including to Harmondstown on the north side, where Aidan Shields worries for his father, who works on Talbot Street.
It was known as Little Guyanese at the time. And 29 minutes past five on that Friday, he was out and pulled the shutters down on the shop and probably saved a few people by pulling the shutters down.
But it wasn't his father, Aidan, had to be worried about.
And this particular Friday, she went into town and decided that she'd collect him.
What Aidan's father didn't know was that his wife, Maureen, had driven into the city to collect him as a surprise, parking her car right outside Guyanese.
5:30, you know what happened. And we discovered afterwards that my mother was just outside and he'd have walked by or on the street, didn't recognise her. And she kind of wasn't recognisable because a few hours later, I was the one who went into town with the wife of one of the lads that she worked for, just there beside Bussaris City Morgue. And so I was duly preceded into what I can only describe as like a slaughterhouse. It was shocking, absolutely shocking. But they pulled the sheet down and it took more than a glance, I can tell you, to decide that was my mother that I had known for 19 years. Everybody expected that maybe my father could have been injured. But no, she was the one that came a cropper that day. He couldn't believe that he had probably walked over her body on the street.
Word also spreads outside of Dublin and across the Irish Sea to Scotland. My mam Margaret, on duty as a nurse in Dumfries, immediately thinks of her sister Anne.
That Friday, I was at work, about to finish my shift when a girl came on from... She was home, had been home for her days off, and she came on to go on night duty. And I said, how'd you get on? She said, grand weekend, or grand few days. She said, but Mom is after ringing me, there's awful bombs in Dublin, and I probably went pale. I said, where? And because Anne's going home, and she's at Talbot Street and somewhere. I said, what, Talbot Street? Shannon's going down there to get the train. What time is it out? She said, oh, somewhere after 5. And she knew by the reaction in my face that I got a shock. So she said, no, it wasn't Talbot Street. So I ran off duty, went up to the nurse's home, turned on the television, thinking I'd see, hoping I wouldn't see. But it did show the carnage in Dublin.
Good evening. As you've just heard on the news, 15 people killed in the Dublin car bombs. 28.
A couple of people lying over there in the cellar, and there was a child over there, and we just called in all ambulances. There was nothing for us to do, remove what we could.
And were there many dead?
I'd say 5 dead. We'd identified as being dead before we started. one of the dead, the child, I think, was outside the pub. The remainder of the dead were in the butcher's shop or in that shop. I don't know what it is now. There's nothing left of it, but there was one dead there.
So, meantime, at home, Anne didn't come home. My brother had gone to Ballymote, as he would normally would, to pick her off the station, from the station, and she wasn't on the train. But he met a neighbour who said, don't worry about it, because a lot of them were turning back because there was carnage on that street.
Nobody's sure what's happened to Anne's friend Josephine. Her sisters, Marion, Kate and Frances, frantically search for information.
Yeah, so from my memory of it is that I was at home in Coolfin, Kilcormac at the time, on the farm with the rest of the family. And we heard about the bombings. Now, there was absolute chaos on that Friday evening. It was just chaos. And the lines were chaotic. So the phone lines were really, really chaotic. So when he got through to Joe's accommodation, he asked, was she there and was she okay and was she safe? And he was assured that she was. And then on the, as Mar said, on the Saturday morning, our local guard came out to the house, to the farm, and said, Mrs. Bradley, have you heard from the girls? And she said she had. And he said, Josie's bag was found on the street, on Talbot Street. And that's when the nightmare began.
It wasn't until the following day that the guards arrived at my workplace to inform me that our handbag had been found. And can you imagine the shock that was? So the first thing I started doing was call the hospitals, and she wasn't listed in any of them. And my next step of call was to the city morgue. So I went to the city morgue, and there was a long queue of people waiting to identify their loved ones. Some had tags identifying their loved ones, but other ones were waiting to be identified. So while I was sitting waiting, I started ringing the hospitals again to be told that Jervis Street had a Janet Bradley registered. So I ran all the way from the city morgue to Jervis Street to find Joe lying in a bed next to a window with the sun shining in on her. She just looked so beautiful. She smiled, we hugged, she squeezed my hand. So she was able to, she was happy that I had found her. But unfortunately, the bomb from the blast had caught her tummy, and she had horrendous damage done on her stomach. Unfortunately, she didn't live. We were very, very happy she stayed alive until we all got to see her. She died on the Monday evening.
Meanwhile, I was still back in Scotland, and the guards obviously contacted the guards in Scotland, and they in turn contacted the hospital, and somewhere around midnight, I guess, I could hear the night sister come and tip-tap down the corridor, and she came into the room, and she never had to tell me to this day. I just knew.
Across the country, families are beckoned to help identify their loved ones in Dublin.
You'd listen to the news like you would 6 o'clock news to get the events of the day and start to come over how there has been explosions in Dublin, so on and so forth. And we'd look at each other and you would say, hope she's okay.
20-year-old Mary Phelan is killed on Talbot Street. Word reaches Waterford late that evening, and her brother Pat.
My dad, in the local pub, he would play cards every Friday night for a significant number of years, say 40, 50 years. And that when he was playing cards, there was a knock came to the door, and he was informed to come outside the door that he wanted to be seen. So they gave him the information that what had happened. So Julie, my dad then went to Dublin the following morning, and he went to the Mater Hospital and he wanted to see his daughter. Well, the reason being, her only identification was a ring. So what father wants to see his daughter like that? So that was that night for my dad, and my mum just, I suppose my mum went into silence, trying to comprehend what had happened. That wasn't easy. That was hard. What Mary did that day, apparently, and she did do it, she finished work on Friday evening, 17th of May, She made her way across O'Connell Street, down Talbot Street. She walked into Guiney's. She was going to go to 21st. So she said she would get a gift. So she did. Guiney's was upstairs at that particular time. Upstairs she went and she came down the stairs, and as she walked out the door, the car was directly outside the door. So that was it. It was over in an instant. The dress that she was going to wear going to 21st, it stayed on the bed for 4 months. It was never touched.
And I do remember arriving home that evening and a neighbour of my mum's coming towards it with a chair. I remember that very, very distinctly.
Back in Dublin, Angela O'Neill hears what happened to both her dad and her brothers.
Then I remember my mother coming home, and I think that was very late into the morning, and my sister and myself went outside to her, and she told us then that my dad was gone to heaven. So I do remember that. Jeez. Actually upsets me. This still upsets me. Bloody hell. So look, that was the day. The boys were very, very ill afterwards. Really, really sick. But I suppose, again, we didn't comprehend. Well, I didn't comprehend any of that at the time. I went ahead and made my first communion the next day. My mother was due a baby as well, baby Martha. And she was stillborn on the 1st of August. She was stillborn and buried my father later in the August.
Three bombs, the injured and killed still being counted. But the carnage wasn't over yet.
Almost an hour and a half later, 120 kilometres away in Monaghan town, a fourth loaded car is being moved into place.
6:30, sat down to watch the TV programme, and Crossroads was always finished at 7:03. And that Friday evening, at exactly 7:03, the credits started to roll at the end of the programme. And just as the credits rolled, there was this almighty boom.